A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Irish Farmers Journal Weekly Podcast.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to this week's Irish Farmers Journal podcast. I'm Amy Forge, Deputy News Editor at the Irish Farmers Journal. And this week, we're joined by political correspondent Pat O'Toole and Sheep and Schemes Editor Darren Carty to discuss Budget 2022. Later in the show, we'll hear from Minister McConnell himself on the budget and an update from the tillage team. First up, we're going to chat to Pat O'Toole. Pat, can you give us an overview of what actually came out of the budget this week?
Sure. It was very much a case of the same again. Most of the schemes that farmers are used to were rolled over. The minister himself described it as a transitional budget because 2022 is the final year of the current cap phase. And 2023 is what everyone's really working towards in terms of transformation, new schemes and transfer of funds. So with that in mind, the aim was just to roll things over. For instance, the GLOSS, which for most GLOSS participants, their five-year contract ended in 2019, more than in 2020, but it's rolled over for this year, and it will be rolled over again next year for all GLOSS participants who want to continue. The REAP scheme, in comparison, the new pilot agri-environmental scheme, which is being funded by the carbon tax, was the centre of an awful lot of controversy because there was supposed to be 49 million of the carbon tax fund, which has been created for farming and for agri-environmental measures, specifically within farming, but outside the cap. That's money is to be used between now and 2030. 49 million of it was scheduled for 2022. That's not happening. The REAP will still be run as the second year pilot scheme, but it will be run from Exchequer funding. The IFA described that as a reneging on a programme for government commitment by the government. So that became the big political football on Wednesday as we absorbed the reality of the budget. Outside of that, not a whole lot new. The ANC still funded about 250 million, BGDP, TAMS. One change in TAMS in relation to solar panels, the level of support for them has been increased. Outside of that, really, same again, nothing extraordinary to report. A small bit of money being, we don't know how much yet, being devoted to about 8,000 hectares of multi-species sward being planted, and the strong corporation scheme being renewed, and the renewal of the soil sampling scheme, which ended for applications were closed last Friday, and that was very popular, so that's been renewed. So the minister would say it's a safe budget. Farm organisations said it fell way short.
Thanks, Pat. And Darren, we might move to you next. Just on those schemes that Pat mentioned, can you go into a bit more detail on them, on each of them, if that's possible? And like, is there anything new in them? Has the funding gone up and down, or is it literally steady as she goes?
Yes, Amy, mainly steady as she goes. If we do a quick fire run through them, the big ticket items are ANC and GLOSS. So ANC, there's 250 million. That'll fund just shy of the 100,000 farmers that, say, get that payment every year. if we're looking at maybe payments this year or where they are so far, there was another 2 million paid out last week. So payments are running over 90,000 applicants at the moment. And the delay, I suppose, in the current scheme is people haven't reached their stocking rate. And there's also maybe some little issues around digitization as well of maps. If we look at glass, Pat mentioned 200 million there. That's a real, I suppose, maybe big ticket item, and one that Charlie McConnell himself has always been keen that he can't be criticised that there's no, say, agri-environmental scheme there, that he was very strong on that when he was in the opposition bench, and he's, I suppose, maybe following through to that now. 36,000 farmers would have rolled over, say, last year, and another 7,000 or 8,000 will join that this year to roll over. Bringing the number, say, total number, Amy, would be shy of 50,000, so a very important payment there. If we're to look at beef, roughly around 80 million funding again, say, directly for beef farmers through the Beef Data and Genomics Programme and the Beef Environmental Efficiency Payment. Looking at BDGP first, it's not expected, Amy, that there's going to be any change. So I suppose last year when it was rolled over, the big target has been this, say, female replacement target, that farmers have to have 50% of their reference number as genotyped eligible heifers that are 4 and 5 star under replacement index. That'll continue to be the case. And also there'll be other things around the survey information, the number of animals to be genotyped. That's not expected to change. On the BEEP, or BEEP S as it's known, there is one slight change there that Adam wrote about this week, and that's it's touted that there'll be discontinuation of the fecal egg sampling measure part of it. And that was worth 10 euros a cow. So look at it, it is, I suppose, maybe significant. That money is being seen to go across to fund the multi-species wards. We haven't got confirmation on exact figures that's involved there, but the figures probably would tally. The dairy calf beef program, it was worth 5 million this year. Funds will only be drawn down about 3.4 million, going on the number of participants. It's 20 euros per head for 20 calves, so 400 euros of a payment is the maximum. It's expected that'll be the same again. Now, look, at as I say, we don't have the final figure as of what exact fund, but I don't see that changing. And then a slight change in the sheep welfare scheme in the 2017 has been approved as the reference year. And that'll bring in about another 2.5 million into the budget. So just shy of 20 million if you get the same number of people applying again. All of them schemes, Amy, will either be opt-in or you'll be rolled over automatically. Looking outside of that, Pat mentioned the strong corporation measure. 10 million put forward again for that. There'll be just shy of, just I suppose, over 8 million probably drawn down this year. So that's significant funding to, I suppose, let anyone apply that had an interest this year. The protein aid scheme, 3 million for that. The payment for this year is seen or forecast to be around 320 euros a hectare. That goes up and down every year depending on the number of applicants, but it probably will be steady again next year. That funds won't change much until 2023, and it'll also continue to be beans, peas and lupins. I'd say from 2023 onwards, there'll be a wider cohort of crops that'll be eligible, but that's an old sort of cap scheme, so it's rolling over as is for now. And then I suppose there was a few sort of maybe schemes, Amy, that have come in recent times that have new money, say some new money, and if I have a second, I'll run through them if that's okay with you. Yeah, so if we look at, say, the soil sampling scheme, that only closed last Friday, and there was 15,500 applications in for it. The department's insiders would say that depending on how many, say, samples per farm, or it's hard to know, but they were budgeting roughly for 12,000 applicants. So it hasn't been clarified yet whether some of the funding, so there's 15 million put forward, that's 5 million up on last year, whether that extra 5 million will just bring everybody that applied to the net for now, and then whether it'll open again, or whether they'll actually go and get more information on certain aspects, that has yet to be clarified. An extra 5 million for organics, and if we look at organics, the funding has been doubled in the last 2 years, so fairly significant. And Pat might comment in a minute, but Pippa Hackett seems determined to significantly increase the area of ground under organics while she's in power. So that, I suppose, that extra 5 million will allow for somewhere between 400 and 500 applicants to come in, or maybe more than that again, because the funding that was outlaid for last year, the 5 million, they were had a target of between 400 and 500 applicants, and they only got 317. Now, we've questions asked the department, Amy, for a few weeks on what's the actual breakdown, because there is, I suppose, maybe this target of getting more dairy, horticulture, and tillage farmers in. Whether that was happening in the last, say, round of intake, we don't actually know yet, but we'll try and tease that out and try and tease out whether the focus in say the next year's intake is going to be around higher payments for them and higher selection criteria. The last one then, Amy, is there's 5 million extra for biodiversity schemes, and that's sort of all around locally led projects, EIP projects, and the funding will continue as is until 2023 on those schemes as well.
Darren, you mentioned there the organic side of things, obviously, and there is targets coming down the line that are there already, like in Farm to Fork, increasing the area farmed in the EU and in Ireland, you know, increasing it to well over what it is now, and Ireland will have a target to hit as well. I suppose Pat Darren mentioned it there. You were speaking to in at the press conference this week on the budget, and I suppose two things came out of that in terms of there was talk in the national herd as well. Can you tell us more about what was said there?
Yeah, just on the organics first, I've just come out of a virtual conference in Brussels looking at the Farm to Fork strategy, which is in its second year now. And there's no doubt DG Agri and DG Sante were talking about the ambition to get to 25% of all land in the EU to organic by 2030. Now, some of the what they said is that some countries are there already. I don't know which ones, but I do know that Ireland is lagging way behind. Pippa Hackett's ambition is to get to 7.5% by 2027, by the end of the current or the incoming cap phase. And that's a very high ambition, because that would require almost a quadrupling of the amount of organic land. And the problem with that is that organic produce, as it increases in volume, is finding it hard to source a place in the market as organic at an elevated price. Flahavens last week announced that they were going to quota limit their organic oat producers, and the problem here is if someone puts themselves into an organic system, they would probably have built in a price increase to account for the loss of yield that they're going to experience. So I think those supports, it's going to be interesting to see how they're directed on farm level. But the gap between the ambition for farming in terms of organics and the reality on the ground is massive in Ireland. And whatever's going on across Europe, there's no way we're going to get to 25%. That 7.5% target looks really ambitious. In terms of the national herd, and I suppose it ties in very much with the carbon targets and with the Farm to Fork again, there is a requirement for reduction in pesticides and fertilizer use under Farm to Fork. And it's one of the forces which is driving the debate around the national herd. But we heard yet again from Charlie McConlogue the line that he has used repeatedly in recent months, that we need to stabilise the national herd. He was asked straight out, do you favour a cut in the national herd? Do you think that's required? And he said no, he felt that that a stable national herd was what was required rather than a cut in the national herd. And his belief was that my objective is that we meet our targets without cutting the national herd. It's achievable but challenging. And he said that the herd has been stabilising over the last 2 years following rapid expansion in the dairy herd post-quota removal. So what was really interesting then is that the same question was redirected to Pippa Hackett, who is the Green Party's agriculture spokesperson. And she said that currently we haven't been able as a sector to stabilise emissions. We need to reduce emissions. But in order to start reducing, you have to plateau and stabilise. So she was talking about reduction of emissions, not reduction of cow numbers, and talking about the plenty of mechanisms that are there to encourage and support farmers in other areas, such as reduction of fertiliser use, and she mentioned the multi-species swards. So if you contrast that with what John Fitzgerald, who is a member of the Climate Change Advisory Council, part of the ESRI, and the recent chair of the Climate Change Advisory Council, who in 2 weeks will be supplying the national carbon reduction targets to government. And that's when the battle will start over the sectoral targets for sectors, including agriculture. And he said that, in his opinion, the national herd needs to be cut by 500,000. So there's some gap there. And the last leg, I suppose, in that debate, Lara Burke, the EPA director, her comments attracted a lot of debate in farming. But actually, if you read very closely what she said, it actually fits the stable herd narrative that Pippa Hackett and Charlie McConlogue have adhered to, rather than calling for cuts, but is talking about stabilisation of the herd, talking about reduction of emissions from the herd and reduction of the other environmental pressures that an expanding herd would deliver. But a stable herd, through efficiencies, can achieve much on. So the last, I suppose, the comment then is Frank O'Mara, following Gerry Boyle, his predecessors, comments which attracted such controversy. Frank O'Mara, on his first outing as director of Teagasc, said that the suckler herd is a very important sector, 70,000 sucklers in the country producing a high quality product, and that Teagasc is strongly supporting the suckler industry through research, advisory and education programs. And that message was very much driven home by Piers Kelly, who is the director of Teagasc's beef research and advisory. And he was at the IFA county executive in Wexford last week, and he spoke very strongly to that as well. I was there. So I think what we're seeing is a consensus at the moment that we're a pushback against these calls for cuts in the national herd, but an acknowledgement broadly that there has to be stabilisation. And who's going to oversee that stabilisation is an interesting question, because if it doesn't happen by itself, if dairy expansion continues, someone may have to make a hard call very soon.
Thanks, Pat. And I think you've covered a lot of ground there, and a lot of it is covered in this week's Irish Farmers Journal. I'd like to thank Pat and Darren for joining me today on the podcast. Now we're going to stay with Budget 2022 and hear from the Minister for Agriculture, Charlie McConlogue. Here he speaks to Pat O'Toole about this week's budget.
Minister, the IFA last Friday accused you of a lack of engagement with them and other farm organisations. Yesterday they accused you of reneging on a government commitment through the deferral of the 49 million. Are relations disintegrating as we come into the crucial decision-making phase of CAP with the farm organisations, or what's your message to farmers and to the IFA itself right now?
No, I don't believe they are, and I've been very focused on having strong engagement with all farm organisations right throughout my tenure, and indeed having very strong engagement and direct engagement with farmers as well right across the country. Obviously that has been more challenging for the year that's been in it with COVID, but thankfully in the last number of weeks I've been able to cover maybe 60 plus percent of the country and actually have direct engagement with farmers as well, which has been very productive and very constructive. But likewise, in relation to all of my engagement with IFA and all the farm organisations, I've worked very strongly with them. It's going to be really more important in the time ahead. Obviously, you know, there's undoubtedly anxiety, it's a time of anxiety and uncertainty when you're moving from, you know, one CAP program to another. So it's important you work closely together. Obviously, of course, we have the climate, targets for all sectors of the economy coming up as well. And obviously that would be, that's a source of anxiety too. And that is one I very much understand and working to support farmers on and secure a good outcome from as well. But in relation to now the next number of days and weeks, I'll be working very closely with IFA and all our farm orgs. And look forward to meeting with them shortly now in the next few days to assess, you know, the engagement so far and also how we step forward the next stages of finalising the CAP strategic plan. And also, of course, engaging and say across all the farm organisations, there's been very healthy and strong engagement in each county as I've gone there, and I found that very useful as well.
You described the current budget as one really... the description of the budget out there, maybe more interesting, is that it's been boring—a boring budget and a very safe budget. Is that a characterization that you would be willing to accept? And would you say that maybe that's not necessarily a bad thing, considering the COVID impact on the economy and the fact that we are in transition? You call it a transitional budget. That it's really a holding mechanism to get us through next year while we make the big decisions for the phase afterwards.
Yeah, I think it's a budget about providing certainty, stability, and confidence in this final year of the CAP programme. And listen, if people describe that as a bit boring, then that's good by me. That's grand by me, because if boring means delivering all the payments to farmers, keeping all of the schemes at full tilt and delivering the funding for that, that's and by me, believe me, that's no small challenge and no small result to ensure that happens, because, as I've said to farmers many occasions, when you get to the very end of CAP, all the schemes are at full participation and full payment level, so it's a real challenge to hold all of that funding and ensure there's no break in the schemes and no break in incomes coming to farmers from that. Last year was really crucial in relation to being able to facilitate what I was able to do this year and or for 2022 and this year, 2021, in terms of that commitment from Minister Michael McGrath, Minister for Public Expenditure, of 11% last year to allow me for the 2 years of the transition period, 2021 and 22, to keep all those schemes going at full level. And I think farmers certainly recognise and appreciate that, because all farmers will be aware of the breaks and schemes they've seen in the past and know what that means in terms of farm income, and they won't for 1 second underestimate or diminish the achievement of ensuring that there isn't any break in those schemes. So obviously also now, because we're at the end of this CAP, it's not possible to run new schemes, so it's about managing and continuing the ones that are there as we now work towards the from January 2023 new CAP, which of course we'll be dealing with entirely new schemes then, developments of many of the ones that are there, but they'll all be new schemes. So that'll be a significant change. So I'm quite glad to be able to keep that certainty and stability there this year in farm payments and schemes. And that was a significant achievement, which I think farmers will certainly recognise and appreciate.
Finally, introducing the budget this morning, you acknowledged the good prices that farmers are receiving across all commodities at the moment. But would you have concerns around the escalating costs, inputs, fuel, fertilizer, pesticides, feed, and building materials all rising very fast in the last 6 months? Is there a concern that farmers are going to get squeezed on their costs? And have you any message to farmers around costs?
Listen, I mean, I think that is a concern, not just for agriculture, but as an economy-wide concern as well. And I understand, farmers are big consumers of have high expenses, and they need good incomes and high incomes to be able to make a profit in that. And obviously, issues such as fertilizer and feed is important in that regard. That's why I felt it was really important to ensure confidence and stability around farm incomes from a CAP point of view. Obviously we don't control what's happening in the markets. Thankfully, the short to medium term projections across most commodities would be as good, that things can change very quickly. But I think it's been a great, a source of optimism and relief for everyone over the last year to have had decent prices across all the sectors. And that's the way we'd like to have it all the time. But certainly, as Minister, I'll closely monitor what's happening, and always will do all I can to support farm incomes. I know farmers always want to earn their money from the market, and it's good to see over the course of the last year that has been much more so the case. And certainly, and I've been stepping up every way I could to support that as well through the CAP income and through government support.
Thank you very much.
Moving on from the budget, we're going to the tillage sector now, and we're going to hear from one of our farmers in the From the Tramline series, which runs in the Farmers Journal. And Stephen Robb speaks to James Robinson from County Donegal about winter cereal crop progress, fertiliser prices and aphids.
James, you're farming here in Newton Cunningham. All the winter crops now sown, up and looking well?
Yes, I got a good start in perfect conditions. Probably the best in a decade, and good establishment. Pre-emerging all done, good conditions, tramlines, and again last week this week with minerals and stuff, and great tramline conditions, everything 100% so far, so happy enough. Yeah.
So with the good conditions, did you go in early this year? And you can hear the tractor going in the background. It's a busy farm today with spuds being harvested as well. With the good weather this year, did you go in a little bit earlier or so, and did you hold off, or was it around about normal time?
Usually about the normal, around about the 18th September, and could have went earlier, but seed wasn't available, but it's time enough, and everything's through good. I got it all sold in a 5-day period, I think, and pre-emerging done what I wanted to do. You didn't have to wait to ground conditions. No, you could, it was one of those years you could just do anything when you wanted to do it, so long may it last.
Is pre-emergence the general strategy up here for winter or for autumn weed control?
No, I just did it because of the conditions. And I was finished sowing, and next day, sprayer on, dry conditions, moist ground, everything was perfect. Most other years, you don't get time to do it, and you're in maybe 2-3 weeks after, and sometimes it's well tillered, the grass, and you don't get a proper kill. No, it's a good, it would be a good option up here if the conditions was good. Perfect, yeah, definitely.
So for any of our listeners who aren't familiar with James's farm, James Farms here on the banks of the Loch Swilly, so it's gently sloping into the Swilly. Quite breezy today. James, is there any issues with aphids, or is there any concern with aphids and BYDV in general this autumn up here?
I found since I put on the grey partridge, all that like bird cover, like there's 9 metres of different flowers and stuff, you wouldn't see any aphids. I didn't spray my barley this year, aphids, and I saw no aphids on the barley, so unless that's help or maybe it's the weather conditions, I don't know. So,
How long has that partridge cover been in for?
This is the 5th year now, so it's full bloom, full of butterflies, everything, bees. It's like a haven. It's a nature reserve when you walk through it, like, and just like one of those nature films you watch. So
you think?
I think it's a big help. Eh?
You think there's a correlation between maybe what natural predation?
It is. I think if it is a carry on of a stubble that's lying, or barley regrown, and they get established in that and lie about it, and if things like that are kept under control, that's half the battle, I think. Eh? Mm.
So you were out this morning with some trace elements on your winter barley. What were you applying and why?
Well, we've a problem up here. Manganese and zinc every year. If you didn't do it, it would just turn like pale colour. And then if it goes white, it's too late. The roots are gone. But so I just put up like a nice half rate of manganese and zinc. And I went Magfos K as well. Like there's a wee bit of, for like there's a wee like a potash application. There's a wee bit of magnesium in it as well. So. And it's not expensive, and you only put on like a half rate as well. So that's a great job this time here. Perfect now, second leaf and the third leaf. So that's all, should be nearly covered now to the early spring, you'd hope.
So would you follow up again with another shot of trace elements in the spring?
See if it's, I'll even go, if there's a spell of getting towards the end of November, I'll give it a wee hit, half rate. I'll definitely get an R rate in the early spring.
Okay, so I suppose all eyes really is to next year now, to the 2022 season. Just in terms of general input costs, the trajectory is up, unfortunately, and there's been a lot of talk about fertilizer. I suppose what impact's that going to have on your farm or on your management style for next year? Will you be cutting back, or are you forward buying, or what's your strategy?
No forward buying. I don't usually buy in out to January, but I won't. It's because I've kind of upped the malt barley a bit, so I was kind of thinking to myself, if you're growing more malt barley, you've less inputs for a start. Like, you're down in units for fertiliser. So if it does go up a wee bit, you're not out as much. Like, for instance, for example, if you rushed out now, when those potatoes are dug today, and put in a field of winter wheat, and you grow up nearly 180, 200 units with a big volume of fertiliser, you know, maybe an extra 100 units in malt barley, then you're going to be hit. So I think it's a good year for someone like malt barley with a low input. But no forward buying, no, definitely not, because I think things will settle down when the two big plants over in England, maybe they get a lot of money from the government, get up and running, things will, the graph will lower a bit, I think.
Please God. Okay. Look, James, thanks very much for having us again. And indeed, thank you for all your contributions throughout the year from the tram lines. And look, you'll be in the paper for the last time, probably in a month's time again. So we will talk to you then.
We're going to stay with the tillage team now again. And this week, the team discusses malting barley and oilseed rape markets, China, fertiliser and prices, solar PV, and with Halloween just around the corner, pumpkins.
Hello everyone, it's Thursday the 14th of October. I'm Stephen Robb and you're very welcome along to the Irish Farmers Journal Tillage Podcast. As always, I'm delighted to be joined by my colleagues Andy Doyle and Siobhan Walsh. It's been a busy week in Ireland's tillage fields, largely helped by pleasantly mild and dry autumnal weather for the most part. And looking across our Sencrop network of weather stations, it's clear to see that it has been a good week weather-wise. There has been splashes of rainfall in the past 7 days in many areas, but amounts are low, much less than 10 millimetres, and temperatures are easily in the mid-teens. So all in all, quite good for getting field work done. So as always, we're going to start this podcast by taking a run around the room to see what's been happening in Ireland's tillage fields in my colleagues' respective areas this week. So Andy, going to kick off with yourself. What have you been seeing out and about?
lots of planting everywhere. I think that people have an intention of planting winter grain. Something is happening in fields now. Lots of fields recently planted, lots of work going on, and an amount of crops already up and seemingly doing quite well. So good progress. Haven't seen anybody doing any harvesting of any other crops, potatoes or beet. That's not saying that they're not going on, certainly potatoes, but just I haven't seen it in my travels.
Over to yourself, Siobhan, what have you been seeing?
Yeah, similar to Andy, plenty of work, plenty of sowing, plenty of crops up. And you know, still there seems to be a lot of crops going in, so it'll be good if the winter area holds. I think people were quite happy with winter crops this year and did quite well out of them. I was on the road a bit this week, and you know, the same up around Dublin. I was in Loud and I met, I'd say, about three different outfits doing maize. So it's great to get such good weather and see so much work being done in such good conditions, leaving soil in good order.
Yeah, certainly. It's been a big week, even on the potato harvesting front. Most guys are at it to some degree this week. Just look, the ground conditions are good. So, and crops are ready, let's be honest. So it's coming together quite nicely. On the northern front, yeah, plenty of field work going on as well. Anyone who hasn't got their crops in at this stage are making a go at it this week. And ground ploughing up quite well. Albeit there has been a little bit more rain at the northern front than the rest of the country. So I suppose to kick off formally into the podcast this week, Andy, I'm going to come to yourself first. You tuned in to the AHDB Markets webinar, which was held this week. What came from the webinar?
Stephen, some things may be semi-predictable, some things may be a small bit of a surprise based on the current thinking in markets. Summarising them very quickly, wheat would be seen as being potentially strong going into next year and maybe even into next harvest. Barley perceived as probably even stronger than wheat as things unfold, but there's certainly a little bit of cold water put on the prospects for maize in terms of price, mainly coming from the probability or possibility of higher global output, with South America being the major driver of the extra production if it happens, but also I think concerns as to what the overall demand will be in China in terms of imports, that there was suggestions that that might be slowing down. And that might take some of the heat out of the market. But look at all of these things. They were on a seesaw. They were also suggesting that, you know, we could see increased biofuel production over the next 12 months, just depending on the way political decisions are made and demand, overall demand returns based on higher inherent fuel costs, higher carbon tax in part of the world, and just general overall usage, what's going to happen there. So they were the kind of main things that were in it.
And to just go back to China for a second, because arguably China has been one of the significant drivers of the uplift in grain markets over the past 12 months or so. The indications are that that is slowing down.
Yes, indeed, and slowing probably a bit on both maize and soya imports. The suggestion was that the pig herd is not where people thought it was going to be. China, of course, had a good harvest of its own this year, which is removing kind of some of the temporary demand that was there in the past because they had bad years. But it's always a bit difficult to know exactly what's happening in China. But the expectation was that the combination of the pig herd in particular and the internal economic dynamics of the country would suggest the marketeers to indicate that we couldn't depend on demand from there being as high in the next 12 months as it has been in the last 12.
Okay, let's turn to oilseed rape briefly. There's been a bit of a dip in the markets this week.
Yes, rape had been going, you know, exceptionally strong. While we might say that grain prices were high, rape prices have been on fire, and there's no other phrase to describe them, for about the past 6 months odd, arguably. And they certainly took a bit of a tumble in the first 2 days of the week. Maybe 30 to 40 euro a ton coming off the futures prices. But they're picking up a bit again at midweek. So look, was it a temporary dip due to selling? I don't know. There would be a feeling that rape will remain scarce going forward for the markets that have to have rape. But the question is, will people swap over and try to use other oils? The major uncertainty in the rape market is the Australian harvest. Australian farmers are very commercial, as they should be, and they obviously followed the high rape prices by planting more acres to meet the potential profitability from that crop. So they have a bigger crop. If they get a good yield, that good yield will come to the world market, and it might do a lot to take the fire out of the market, but maybe not the heat. But that basically means that, you know, as I look forward at it, there is a lot to be said for thinking of trying to forward sell some rape currently. At the moment, I think it's a little thereabouts 500 euro a ton for next harvest. If you compare that with the fact that it was kind of traditionally around 390, 410. So it's an attractive price as a forward price.
And by all accounts, growers have responded to that. And indications are that we're seeing an increase in winter oilseed rape area this year.
Yes, our best guess, and it is only a guess rather than something that's very technical, but our best guess would be that the winter oilseed rape area has risen by somewhere around 25%. And it might be more than that, but that's kind of where the current best guess is, which would leave us maybe 13,000 hectares of winter oilseed rape. We would have another 1,000 hectares odd of spring rape on top of that. And if the price held into the spring, you could possibly see spring rape area pushing up to 1,500 or maybe even 2,000 hectares, which would give us a significant area of oilseed rape for a change. And of course, what that means is that the areas that go to either oilseed rape or beans, they won't be in cereals of any sort. And with the probability of increased winter plantings, weather permitting, for another 3 weeks, if that happens, well, then we could see a significant decrease in spring crop plantings next year.
Okay. Siobhan, oilseed markets weren't the only market which caught our attention this week. There's been some movement on the FOB Creel Malt and Barley price index this week.
Yeah, so I got a bit of a fright this morning when I looked at it nearly. Well, it's good news, but the spot price, so barley that's available for sale now, was at 330 euro per ton for that's the FOB Creel, and it's done on a July basis. FOB Creel is a bit it's a bit of a mystery market at times. It's hard to understand, but the spot price at the minute is at 330 euro per ton, and I suppose that looks really good for malt and barley. But Bort Malt as of yet haven't put out a fixed price offer for their growers. They usually would in the autumn time, and that fixed price, of course, will be for harvest 2022. So we're not sure where that price is. So in mid-September, we think it was about 194 euro a ton, but we don't have access to that price and don't know where that price is at the minute. So I think growers are getting a little bit frustrated. You know, they're planting now, there's winter malt going in, and those farmers have no option to fix any barley at present, or don't know where the price is. So
just I mean, remind our listeners, Ian, Siobhan, where did the malt and barley price end up for 2021?
So it was 237.67, I think, was the average. And then if you had distilling barley, there was a tenner added on top of that. And some farmers then would have fixed prices. There was a fixed price back in January. I think it was 200 euro a ton. So depending on what you fixed, then it was added to that average as well. And growers were paid last week, but as of yet, they're sewing away and have no idea of any sort of a fixed price. And I suppose, look, they're sowing other crops as well. As Andy said, you know, winter cereals are being planted, and maybe people are going to opt for more winter cereals instead of spring cereals. So, I mean, if the price doesn't come out soon, it could be a bit of a risk as well. You know, farmers did quite well out of their winter cereals this week. The malt price wasn't maybe as strong as in comparison to other grains because of the way the structure was. It just worked out maybe a little bit lower than normal this year. So I think the price needs to come out fairly soon in order to secure the area.
Yeah, certainly. And by all accounts, the current spot price would indicate that it needs to be a strong price as well.
Yeah, but look, and it'd be nice to have that price as well. Like the market is there. It'd be great if the farmers could just see that price every week. You know, it's there. It's just we need access to it, even if it came out on a text message every week or something.
Yeah, which by all accounts should be quite doable.
Just add to that, Stephen, before we leave it, that the grain movement, those bulk ships, the transport cost of those, it seems to have kind of escaped the market for quite a while. But I think this week, the week after, and I don't know how long into the future, the overall cost associated with moving a ton is gone up quite significantly. So that value technically should be added to any product that's available from the home market.
Okay, so in other words, it's making indigenous produce more competitive.
Yes.
Excellent. Okay, guys, look, we're going to move on in the interest of time. Siobhan, once again, we're touching on fertilizer prices in this week's Irish Farmers Journal newspaper. Just give us a quick rundown on what you have in store for us.
Look, fertilizer, Andy kind of touched on some of this already. You know, markets are rising, and fertilizer is rising as well, and urea is now over €800 a ton. Compounds then you're looking at probably over €700 a ton for 18-6-12. So the market continues to move. Contributing to this, natural gas price, it took a little bit of a dip last week, but started to rise again on Tuesday. But in the past month, natural gas has increased by 57% in price. So that's one of the drivers. And then what Andy was talking about there, the high grain markets, those countries that are forward selling grain and they're buying their fertilizer at the same time, that's all contributing to it. And I suppose, look, it's going to be a high input year next year, a high cost on the inputs, and you know, farmers should be thinking about forward selling their grain and counteracting some of that, some of those high prices.
Yeah, I mean, just on the gas price, we have a piece in this week's paper from our colleague Anne Finnegan on the AgBiz page, is just on gas price in general. There's been a lot of talk about this Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline coming on stream from Russia to Germany, and its implications on alleviating the gas crisis that we're currently experiencing. It certainly depends on who you talk to in the industry, but the feeling is that it's not going to do much in the short term. The pipeline is there, it's laid, it's ready to go. The final deal as such is being worked out, from what I understand, and hopefully gas molecules will start flowing soon. But realistically, you know, the prices that we're experiencing now, you know, gas is forward bought, so it's forward priced. They work in the forward market, so you know, even if there was a suitable supply of gas on the market at the moment, we're not going to see that really influence things until next year at the earliest. So you're right, Siobhan, it is looking like a high cost year, which is all the more important for Bortmouth to come out and give growers a good forward price for the year. But we will wait and see. I suppose just whenever we're talking about winter sowing and spring sowing, just because of the indication of where input prices are going, surely we're going to look at a higher area of like some beans maybe next year, or spring beans, just purely because to try and cut down on input costs.
Yeah, definitely. Like there's already plenty of people talking, saying that they're going to plant beans next year and they won't have the nitrogen costs. I suppose what's important to note there as well, you know, if you plant beans, they're hungry for P and K as well. So You know, just because you're cutting down on the nitrogen, you're going to have to watch your P and K indexes. But yeah, it certainly looks like there's going to be a lot of people planting, which is good in so many ways, but is also kind of worrying because, you know, that budget of 3 million, the more area that goes into that 3 million, the smaller the payment gets. So you might know a bit more about that, Andy. Like, is there a scope for the department to add on to that budget, or is it up to EU level whether they can add on money or?
I'm not sure that they can add on money. The scheme itself wasn't controversial in year one, but it became very controversial in year two when the French objected to the scheme being used to increase area, which of course was the major reason that we did it, because we were starting at a very low or almost no base. So it is somewhat controversial in Europe, but if you stand back and look at it against all our requirements to try and decrease nitrogen, to decrease carbon footprint, etc., wouldn't it be a good thing if we moved on some of those things a year earlier than just having to wait for the new cap to look at a new protein scheme? Like, we know that protein production scheme will continue into the future, and that's a good thing. We also know that the department are trying to get more money there to try and keep that area, indeed a bigger area, that they're going to increase the total from the 12,000 hectares upwards, so that people can get more acres into protein type crops or leguminous crops specifically. And with a bigger payment, it should help to make it more attractive, because the more acres we have that require zero artificial nitrogen, the lower our carbon footprint becomes. If this is a year when farmers are automatically thinking towards a crop that would require less nitrogen, perhaps this is the year to try and make that whole practice that little bit more appealing to them, if it were possible. And of course, I accept it may not be possible, because it's an EU-controlled state aid that has to be negotiated. They may or may not accept it, but it would be a good time to be asking that question, to be trying to do something extra in the national interest.
Yeah, and like Andy, you talked about all the benefits of beans there and the low footprint, and like, you know, there's the fertilizers reduced, the pesticides on them is pretty low. Some farmers don't apply any fungicide at all, so they're a really good crop for soil as well. And when you look at the budget, like there was 21 million allocated to organics in the budget, it's up from 16 million last year. And you know, the only 60% of the places in the organic farming scheme were applied for this year. So I mean, you know, there's a few things to look at there on where some of that money maybe could be better used, or where it's going to be taken up more and can still have an extremely positive effect on the sector.
But I think, Siobhan, just to follow up on that, it would be quite negative if the tillage farmers went and pushed 15,000-16,000 acres of beans into the ground, if the seed was there to do that, only to end up with maybe two-thirds or half the payment rate per acre or per hectare. That would be a negative in terms of the direction that we want the industry to move into the future. So it's certainly well worth pursuing.
Yeah.
Siobhan, while we're on budget 2021, budget 2022, I should say, look, we will have full coverage in this week's Irish Farmers Journal newspaper, but there were a few measures which are directly applicable to the tillage sector, particularly straw chopping.
Yeah, so straw chopping, look, and as you said, Stephen, this is going to be well covered in the paper this week, so we'll just touch on it. Like, the straw scheme is to continue the strong cooperation measure. And just a few things to note, I suppose. The VAT rate has gone from 5.6 to 5.5, so that'll affect tillage farmers and their grain. And the second phase of the soil sampling scheme has been allocated 15 million euro. So there was 10 million for that scheme in last year's budget. So that's it says the first phase of the scheme saw 15,500 farmers apply. So they're gearing up for the second phase of that scheme already now in the budget with that 15 million. And look, you can read this week's paper for things on the carbon tax and the rest of it. There's really good detail.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, just on the renewables front, like there has been, look, I would say it's positive, positive moves on renewables front in this week's budget. Arguably, it's more domestic than agriculture. Look, we're seeing, you know, 10 million euros of new money, such going to a solar PV scheme for 2022 for domestic customers. I assume that'll apply to farmhouses as well. And new money being allocated towards retrofitting homes to try and increase that energy efficiency. But I suppose directly applicable to agriculture, we did get news this week that under TAMS, the available level of funding for solar PV systems can be increased from 40% to 60%, which is good, really good. However, I would still argue it's a little bit limited. I think under TAMS, the maximum size of the system, solar system, which you can install is around 11 kilowatt. To put that into perspective, that's about 500 square foot for a rooftop solar PV system. You know, look at the size of your typical tillage farms, sheds, look at the roof space that's available. It's not really adequate, so it's not. And considering that the micro generation scheme, you know, will allow installations of up to 50 kilowatt in size, you know, you'd have to question is TAM suitable for it. Look, I suppose one figure that keeps floating around in my head that came out there a couple of weeks ago is there's enough roof space in Ireland to accommodate for 3,000 megawatts worth of electricity. So not just kilowatt, a megawatt. So it's substantial. But yeah, I just don't think the funding is in place at the moment to make that a reality. But look, we have spoke about micro generation on this podcast quite a bit. Still waiting for a confirmed timeline from the commission's or the CRU. But look, as I said before, they're 3 or 4 months late now. So what's another few weeks in delaying the publication of the timeline?
Yeah, it's disappointing. Like, we hear so much about renewables and greener energy, and yet this is being held up so badly.
Yeah, and look, we all know that there's a real appetite out there at farm level to get in on the renewables game, and micro generation, solar, it's a good start. We'll put it that there away. It's a good start. But look, we will move on again in the interest of time. Andy, we had a conversation last week about aphids and about the risk of BYDV on winter, autumn sowing cereals this year. You have elaborated on that in this week's paper.
Yes, Stephen, you know, given the fact that we spend an amount of time on this podcast talking about the fact that we're having good weather, that's the positive. The negative is that it's also good for some other things, and in particular pests. And, you know, given the fact that temperatures through September were above normal, and there are a couple of degrees above normal in a lot of the tillage areas of the country, even as we speak today and yesterday, that means that the multiplication rate of aphids is higher than it would normally be. And that probably means that the risk of barley yellow dwarf virus infection is higher than it might be of another year. Certainly this time last year, we ended up with virtually no problems because everything was so much cooler. This year is a different kettle of fish. And I think that given the risk that's there, with early sown crops, I think people will have no choice but to move and to get at least one insecticide on. I spoke to people yesterday, and they're putting on insecticide this week. I think it's fair to say that a lot of tillage farmers would prefer if they didn't have to apply insecticide. It's an input that most people would prefer not to be using nowadays. But given the potential risk to the crop, there's little choice if we know the pressure is high. And I'm also covering the fact that, you know, research is trying to be a bit more precise and accurate in the advice that it's going to give farmers going forward as to whether or not there's a risk over and above the actual visible movement of aphids. If aphids are moving, are they carrying the virus with them? Because if they're not, they're no risk. If they are, they are a definite risk. And that's research is working in that area to try and give better advice into the future. But that information is not there yet.
Yeah, I mean, again, the same questions posed as last week, you know, from a grower's point of view, who's maybe sown a little bit earlier than he should have. What is the, I suppose, what's the course of action? How do they decide whether or not they can get out there and apply insecticide or not? Is there a threshold? Are they on their hands and knees looking for aphids, or is it just purely an indication of aphid numbers based on temperature?
A lot of what people will have done in the past is an indication of numbers. We know that aphid numbers are relatively high in some crops that are susceptible to multiplication. Therefore, we know that aphids are about. Are the aphids of direct interest to BYDV about? That requires a bit more precise examination. But the general comment that I'm getting from people is that they are. Are they carrying virus? That's something we don't know. And we research is asking the question, but it's not yet in a position to advise us currently about what to do going forward. So I think most people will take a view that they will be protecting their early sown crops with at least one aphicide this week or next week. And then they may move again later in the month or early next month, depending on what happens, the conditions between here and there.
Okay. So moving on, Siobhan, look, I think we can all agree that tillage farmers are industrious and are not afraid to try new things and new crops. And around about this time of year, we're seeing a lot of the one particular crop around the place to coincide with Halloween, and that is pumpkins. So Siobhan, this week you visited a pair of pumpkin growers, twin brothers, I believe.
Yeah, Oisin and Micheál, and it was a really, really nice farm visit. So Oisin and Micheál aren't farmers now. They have horticulture and farming in their backgrounds, but not from a farm, and have rented 4 acres and grow pumpkins. And just a really good story. They've been growing them since 2018, and I suppose they were taking a bit of a hit. They were selling pumpkins, you know, to other patches, and they were selling them on, they weren't selling them themselves. So this year they have their own pumpkin patch and are hoping to get a better margin out of it. And I suppose when you see the patch, there's 4 acres and 15,000 pumpkins on it. And there's a lot of work planting those pumpkins and looking after them and watering them during the year. And I suppose interestingly, both of the twins are doing PhDs. So they're 28, and Oisin is studying, he's in biomedical engineering, and Oisin is crop science. So he's actually been growing cultures in the lab like Trichoderma and Lactobacillus, and spraying these on crops to see will they fight disease. So he's been using some of those products on the pumpkins to keep away some of the powdery mildew and the rots. And by all accounts, seems to be quite happy with the pumpkins during the year. Said he had very healthy crops, and he's applying other things like seaweed and that kind of thing. And they lay plastic to suppress the weeds, so they're not using chemicals on the patch.
Well, sounds like a fantastic reading. And where can we find that in this week's paper?
That's on the sustainability pages. Yeah, just a nice read, and great to see, you know, someone who didn't come from brothers who didn't come from a farm, and they've started up with their 4 acres and not a bother on them. It's a really good story.
Good stuff. Good stories. That's what we're always interested in hearing in this sector. So I suppose to finish up, Andy, what is in store for the week ahead? Is this settle spell going to continue, or are we going to see a breakdown anytime soon?
The only way I can answer that, Stephen, is not according to the current forecast. We've had a lot of rain in the forecast for the last few weeks, and a lot of tillage areas didn't see it at all. So maybe that look will continue for many people who have work to do. But the forecast, as it's given to us this week, would see a significant break probably coming on Saturday. Significant because it's happening across the country, but rainfall volume is not that big, from 2 to 10 mil, depending on where you are in the country. Sunday, a reasonable day everywhere, but Monday then is to be the wet day. There's a fair bit of rain in the forecast, from 11 to 20 mils, just depending on where you are. South probably getting the worst end of it. around by the west and up into the northwest as well. Next 2 days, rain again, but not that much rain. On Tuesday, Tuesday's rain is mainly in the southeast and the west. Other areas, kind of 2 to 6 mil, that might not stop you if you were going in straight behind a plough. A bit of rain on Wednesday as well, but not bad. I think the difference is that we're looking next week, as things go by, at nighttime temperatures falling fairly significantly down to about 4 degrees Monday, Tuesday and Wednesday, but relatively high daytime temperatures associated with it. So that's kind of somewhat unusual that we're seeing that day-night gap increasing at this time of the year. All in all, we could still see some work being done over the next week.
Good to hear, Andy. Good to hear. Okay, so guys, time has once again beaten us here. So from Andy, Siobhan and myself, Stephen Robb, thank you all very much for listening. And until next time, stay safe, stay tillage farming.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.